Hello and welcome to this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lab. Well, in one fell swoop, Scottie Scheffler won the FedEx Cup, secured one of the best seasons in a past decade and a half on the PGA Tour, and all but cemented his case as the PGA Tour Player of the Year. Rex, you're on the ground. You just heard from Scottie Scheffler in his winner's press conference. What was today like for you from your perspective?
I want to start with, and I know everyone loves it when we pull back the curtain a little bit, and so it's important to keep everyone engaged. So Scottie Scheffler teed off on Thursday for the opening round of this event. And it's important for me to get all these facts correct because I don't want this to come back. He teed off at 2 o'clock, as you're aware, but I just want to make sure everyone else is aware. And so as I'm walking with that final group at exactly 2:02 on Thursday, he hadn't gotten done with the hole yet. I received the following text from one Ryan Labner. Quote, poor Scotty, period. No chance he wins, period. Moving on.
I mean, if you look at the totality of the tournament, Rex, I understand he ended up winning by 4 shots over Colin Morikawa. I understand at one point on Sunday, he was up by 7 shots. The 2-shot lead that he had entering the Tour Championship evaporated after 15 minutes after the very first hole. On Sunday, and I'm sure we're going to be getting into this, after the shank on the 8th hole, the back-to-back bogeys, Scottie Scheffler was just up by 2 shots with 10 holes to play. It was certainly more tense and more dramatic, and I think that's a testament to Scottie Scheffler's consistent excellence that he was able to pull this out as convincing as it was. But this was like the doomsday scenario that we had talked about ever since the PGA Tour started, this staggered start, that you could win. Like the hypothetical, remember, was always like, oh, let's say a guy wins 7 times. Let's say a guy wins a major championship. Let's say a guy wins a Players' Championship, and all he brings into East Lake is a 2-shot lead that can evaporate in a heartbeat, whether it's a snipe left out of bounds or a birdie bogey, a 2-shot swing, or as he had with Xander Schauffele on the very first hole of the tournament. Yes, I assume, I presume that was a bit premature on my part, but I'm nothing if not a hot take artist.
It was the ultimate hot take. You asked me my takeaways. First and foremost, the takeaway was the funniest moment of the year for me, maybe our colleague Mark Schlegel, asking Scottie Scheffler to explain what happened on the 8th hole when he hit the quote-unquote shank. You've said it now a couple of times. Most golfers recoil at the notion. And Scottie Scheffler went into a very lengthy, very funny explanation of the science of hitting the shank. He explained that the club face is flat, and you have this knob where, you know, the shaft goes into the club face. If you hit it flat on the club face, it goes that way. But then if you – anyway, he didn't want to talk. He didn't want to talk to us. He didn't want to talk to our colleagues, Rich Lerner.
He was so over it. He was so over it.
He wants to, and I don't blame him. He was certainly a man who looked like he'd left everything on the golf course. And I do want to get into that certainly that middle part of the round, which is fascinating to me. When you go from being in command, being in full flight, doing what he does best, and then suddenly he almost hits it out of bounds on 7, ends up making bogey, hits the shank, which apparently the world number one and the undisputed greatest golfer at the moment hits a lot of these, according to him, which made me sort of look up and take notice. It has something to do with the slope and how he's coming in, and I couldn't tell you exactly how it works out. The part that I take away from this is, one, how spent he is. You get an idea of how invested he was to have this happen. Look, he has dismissed how important this is for a long time. It's what he has to do, but clearly this had been gnawing at him. He'd been in this situation before. Back in 2022, he came into the final round with a six-shot lead and ended up shooting a 73 and finished tied for second. So that was looming over him, regardless of everything he's accomplished, just not this year, but really over the last 3 years. This was something that I think deep down inside meant the world to him, that he wanted to finish off the season in style, that he wanted to nail the landing and not have anyone second guess. He didn't want us, you and I, to have the conversation about, well, maybe Xander, he did win the FedEx Cup, maybe Player of the Year should go to him. He wanted to do away with all of that nonsense. And I'm always so reluctant to do this because it's so patently unfair and it always falls flat. But the only comparison to what Scottie Scheffler has done, not just this season, but really the last 3 years, he's won 13 times over the last 3 years. The only comparison is Tiger Woods. And if you start kind of going down the list and, you know, knocking off check marks, it is, they're pretty much neck and neck over the course of a 3-year span. It's a small sample size, to be fair. Tiger did it for 2+ decades and Scottie's done it for 3 years. And I know everyone's going to say, give it a minute, bro. But it's the only benchmark for him. And that, to me, is wildly impressive when you hear the likes of Adam Scott and Rory McIlroy sort of echo those comments that, yep, Tiger's the only comp here.
Yeah, I mean, this is the best 3-year stretch in the PGA Tour since Tiger 06, 07, 08 was abbreviated, obviously, because of the knee surgery. And then 09, once again, I think the best comp right now is 07 for Scotty's season, measuring up with a major championship. Just highly impressive. I thought this was a fitting finale for Scotty Scheffler in a lot of ways, Rex. Like, I think four shots, the spread that he had between him and Kyle Morikawa was indicative of kind of the dominant season that he'd had. I think four shots was, like, at minimum what Scotty Scheffler should have won this tournament by. When you look at the point total that he had for the remaining of the season, what was it, 25 consecutive weeks of the FedEx Cup that he had held? That's the longest in tour history. Like, that should have been a wide margin, and it was. So I feel like that was fitting. I thought, too, Rex, that Sunday in particular was sort of a microcosm for Scotty's season. And when you look at all that has been thrown at him this year, whether it was the bulky putter that he overcame at Bay Hill, whether it was the achy neck that he had at the Players Championship that he went on to win. Remember the arrest, obviously, at Valhalla, and he still went on to contend at the PGA Championship. The shank on the eighth hole that cut what was a seven-shot advantage into two shots. Like, he has overcome it all over the course of his season, and he was able to do it again on Sunday and win the FedEx Cup. You mentioned what other players are talking about to you, and I'm curious, in your conversations with the players, like, there has to be a sense at this point of, like, how do we beat this guy? Like, he's the best driver of the golf ball. He led the field in strokes gained off the tee at a golf course where there was a premium on putting the ball in play and avoiding the Bermuda rough. You look at his approach play. It's the best since Tiger Woods' prime. You look at his putting, which was maligned up until, you know, probably earlier this spring. He put it all together this week. Tops in driving, third in approach, third or fourth in putting. Like, how do you beat this guy? It's a legitimate question.
Well, and two legitimate funny answers, I have to admit. When we ask Adam Scott, how do you beat him? He said, look, I've tried everything. He pointed out that over the last few months, he switched to Scotty Scheffler's golf ball and a lot of the golf clubs that Scotty Scheffler is playing, just trying to make up ground somehow. I think Rory probably had the best answer. And this goes to the idea that Tiger Woods in his prime, we're going to sit here and remember all the highlights, right? It's making the putt on the 72nd hole at Torrey Pines and the histrionics and everything that went into that. The chip in at the Masters to beat Chris DeMarco. Like, those are the highlights that we always think of. But I always go back to when he beat Stewart Cink one year at the match play. And Stewart Cink, who's a hockey fan, said, you know what? He plays prevent defense. And it's a hockey term. And in this particular case, he was just talking about, he just waits for everyone else to make mistakes. Like, look, we all know he's brilliant. We know he can do things with the golf ball that we can't. And I think that's a really good description of how Scotty Scheffler plays the game of golf. Because Rory pointed out, we asked him specifically, like, what do you admire most about his game? And he said, look how many rounds that he has with no bogeys. He said, it's mind-blowing. When you look at what he does well, it's he doesn't make mistakes. That, yes, he'll shoot two or three under par, and he'll just make two or three birdies. He won't have to make up the difference. And it's interesting that it's something that Rory is obviously struggling with right now. He's making those two or three or four or five birdies, but also making three or four bogeys to sort of offset that. He just plays a workman-like style of golf that's hard to beat. I mean, I'm sure if you really sit on that private plane tonight with Colin Morikawa and ask him, are you aggravated? The answer is absolutely yes. Because Colin Morikawa played brilliant golf this week. To spot the world's best player, six strokes, which essentially is what he did with the starting stroke system. I mean, you're already putting yourself way behind. You don't have much of a chance. But he really gave it an effort, as you pointed out. Got it to two strokes at one point midway through the round on Sunday. And Scotty just did what he always does. He makes three straight birdies right around the turn, starts building the lead back up again. And I thought the exclamation point for the season was the eagle on 14. I feel like you could almost see everything sort of wash off his back. All of the things that you pointed out, the putting woes, the neck issue at the Players, certainly whatever it is that happened at Valhalla, all of those things felt like they were in the past at that point.
Yeah, Colin Morikawa did win the Ghost Leaderboard. He will take the Gross Championship. I think he gets first place world ranking points, so Kyle Morikawa will be climbing the OWGR as well. I think it's a great point that you make, Rex, about Tiger and how the flair for the dramatic that Tiger had and all of the highlight reel moments, I think, sort of colored what Tiger's career was known for. And that was absolutely snuffing the life out of golf tournaments on the weekend, where you know he was going to hit it pin high, you know he was going to pick up shots on the par fives, you know he was going to turn in a 67 or 68 and continue to build his advantage methodically in such a calculated manner. That's exactly what Scotty Scheffler does. The hallmark of his career, of his play, is pin high approach shots. That puts so much more pressure on your opponents when you are essentially not going to be making a mistake. The range of outcomes that Scottie Scheffler has, performance-wise, are so small, certainly compared to like a Rory McIlroy, who has such fluctuations in his play from day to day. But you know exactly what you are going to get from Scottie Scheffler. You're going to get preeminent driving. You're going to get, if not the best iron play that week, you're going to get somebody that's in the top five. Yes, his putting can be a little bit streaky, but he has turned that now from what was a major glaring deficiency into something that might not be a weapon, but it's certainly something that he can rely on, as he did at the Olympics, as he did throughout these FedEx Cup playoffs, as he did at the Masters, the Players Championship, any number of the signature events that he won this year on the PGA Tour. It's very Tiger-like in that sense, Rex, is that it puts so much more pressure on the opponents to be perfect, because Scottie Scheffler is essentially playing a brand of golf that is as close as you can get.
Well, and I want to take the comparison one step further. I'll also go to the idea that Tiger Woods was really good at compartmentalizing. We all know what happened off the golf course with him, and yet despite or maybe because of all of those things, he was still brilliant. And look, Scottie hasn't had near as much issues with crisis management as Tiger Woods did, but you look at what happened at Valhalla. He shot a 66 on the same morning that he was in a jail cell. It's hard to wrap your mind around that. And even though he didn't win the PGA Championship, I think he ended up finishing tied for eighth. That shows a level of resilience that is very much Tiger-like. And you brought up a really good point about his putting, and I kind of wrote this earlier in the week, that the redesign here at East Lake, Andrew Green, we talked a lot about it during the preview podcast, that actually played right into his hands, because I kind of broke it down statistically and asked some folks, Brett Fax, and some folks that I trust on this. And essentially what it did is, because of the firmness of the greens and because they were new and there was some new breaks to it, it brought everybody kind of closer to the middle. And essentially it made the best putters not quite as good as they had been in the past. And look, we're talking about percentages here. And it made Scottie not quite as bad as he was in the past. And he actually picked up rounds on the field, picked up strokes on the field on the greens for the week. All those things added up to exactly what you just said. Colin Morikawa played about as close to perfect golf as you could have played on this particular golf course this week, given the conditions. And he still came up 4 strokes short.
Yeah, Scottie Scheffler was last in the field in putting over the course of his history at East Lake. The fact that they completely rebuilt the golf course, the fact that they do not have sort of that the grain that has been built in there for 100+ years, certainly benefited him. And Scottie Scheffler made a bunch of putts at this golf course. Speaking of which, Rex, what was the main takeaway, do you think, from the players of a completely rebuilt East Lake? Again, tees, fairways, greens, bunkers, completely redone year over year. What were the players saying?
I think by and large, they were willing to take the long view, because there were certain things that they didn't like. We talked earlier in the week about having to do internal out of bounds off the 18th green going into the 10th fairway. It was strange. It was not exactly what you want to do straight out of a redesign. They had to do the same thing on the 6th. And 7th holes. Those are things that probably should have been thought about before you started tearing down trees. But to their credit, the players did not fixate on those things. I think Xander Schauffele probably said it best. He would have liked the PGA Tour to maybe give this a year to go in, and maybe we played this year's Tour Championship somewhere else. I don't know where we would end up moving it, because you don't want the players to be their first experience and them not to like it. I will tell you that most players that we talked to this week were willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. Let it grow in a year, and they feel confident coming back next year. The design, the elements, I think everyone kind of liked what he did to it. Otherwise, before this year, it was very much a mundane, I'll go as far as saying, boring layout. It's pretty much up and back. There's nothing very special to it, and it's still in the same footprint, but there is character to it. It does sort of get your interest now. Certainly off the tee, it makes you make some decisions that weren't there before, and especially going into the greens. I think the way the 18th hole played this week is probably the best example, and Rory was really quick to point this out, that when he was finishing up, he laid up kind of on purpose. And he said when he looked up at the board, he was 50 feet-ish from the hole, and he was the closest for the day. So imagine that when it grows in. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I think it's worlds apart from what it used to. I think this was one of the most monotonous and tired courses on the entire PGA Tour. It is just so much more interesting now as a layout, and I think it'll only get better once it beds in. Once it grows in, they couldn't even – I think the PGA Tour certainly took it easy in terms of setup this week, certainly with the hole locations. I don't think the greens were nearly as scary for the players. Like, I think when we talked on the Wednesday, like, we were thinking that we were going to have pitching wedges that hit the green and bounded over into gnarly Bermuda rough. That didn't really play out that way. I think the PGA Tour is very conscious of where they put it with some feeding slopes as well. Colin Morikawa won, again, the gross leaderboard at 22 under par. I think that goes to show that, A, players are adaptable. These are the best players in the world. They can, if you give players 2 or 3 days, they can figure out a golf course. But, two, I think a very benign PGA Tour setup that was trying not to make these players hate it. From a golf course design standpoint, it's just so much more interesting, particularly the green complexes. I think with a couple more years, it will be great. I was screaming, Rex, when I was watching the Scotty Scheffler press conference video stream. I was screaming at the camera saying, someone asked Scotty, after being the number one seed each of the last 2 years and not getting it done, if he thought his performance this week validated the format in any way, or if he still thinks it's A, garbage, and B, needs to be tweaked. You covered the tournament. Was it boring? Was it garbage? Does it need to be tweaked? Was Scotty's dominant, convincing win a validatory a checkpoint for the PGA Tour?
To be fair, he did not say garbage, to be accurate. He did not say garbage. He has called it silly.
Silly.
On numerous occasions, and I tend to agree with that. And I do not want to do this podcast. We've already done this. You're going to sit here and talk about all the changes they need to make, and I'm just going to come back with the idea that, okay.
Was it boring? Was this tournament boring? Was this tournament boring?
No, we just got through. We just spent about a part of 10 minutes, if I'm looking at the clock correctly, talking about how things did get exciting about halfway through, and that was in large part because of Colin Morikawa's play combined with some very uncharacteristic mistakes by Scotty Scheffler. However, I think it's exactly fair given the season that he had, because we can sit here and talk about what kind of advantage he should have coming in. Should it be 2 strokes? Should it be 1 stroke? Should it be more? Because I think some people, given what we just said about his year, it is unrivaled only by Tiger Woods. I mean, if you really want to sit down and talk about it, maybe he deserved a 5-stroke lead. I don't know, but you're never going to catch him. Look, the tour is in a lose-lose situation when it comes to this event. I did not find it boring. And I guess I would ask you, as a viewer at home, if you found it boring. I keep going back to this simple idea that it wasn't that long ago, within the span of my career, maybe even your career, there was a time when both Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson would not come to this event, that they had no interest after a long year, and all they were doing is showing up at one more event that really didn't mean much to them. And what the tour has created from that disaster is a tournament that got every single player who's qualified here. Let's don't overlook that. And a lot of money. And I would argue some compelling golf during a time of year when you, with your Homer shirt on, is much more fixated on University of Georgia football than anything else.
I am a FedEx Cup baby. I started my journalism career a couple years after the FedEx Cup inception.
FedEx Cup baby.
In 2007. I like the FedEx Cup. I like what it's trying to do. No, I do not think the Tour Championship has it quite right. This year, it certainly worked. Scotty Scheffler was the best player all year long. He wins the FedEx Cup. That's the first time that has happened since the staggered start system started in 2019. This is also the first time that the number one seed heading into the playoffs. So Scotty Scheffler after the regular season, number one seed. First time that player has gone on to win the FedEx Cup as well, which I think is probably an indictment of the format as well. I'd be open to some other tweaks as well. It does not seem like PGA Tour leadership is all that keen on doing so. I do maintain, as I maintained after the regular season finale, the Wyndham Championship, I thought that if Scotty Scheffler did not win this FedEx Cup and if there was some sort of very strange outcome where a Keegan Bradley wins the FedEx Cup, or as we talked about on Wednesday, the doomsday scenario of Ludvig Åberg winning the FedEx Cup without winning a single OWGR sanctioned event so far in 2024. Had that happened, I think the PGA Tour could have potentially been compelled to make some changes. The fact that Scotty Scheffler is going to be splashed all over their marketing campaign for the 2025 season upcoming, I think is validation that it did work. You and I, Rex, will be back probably for an emergency podcast on Tuesday after the picks for the U.S. and International President's Cup teams have been finalized, with 2 days until Captain Mike Weir and Captain Jim Furyk make those selections. Do you think anything that happened this week at Eastlake could sway those two captains in any way? And who are you thinking is going to be on that team?
I'm doing a breakdown for NBCSports.com/golf tonight, just on the idea of who helped and hurt their chances here at Eastlake. And that's always a stretch because, as I pointed out earlier in the week, look, this is a 2-year process. And the idea that it came down to some sort of 72-hole qualifier this week is just ridiculous. But I think Jim Furyk is going to look at form. And so I think Russell Henley probably did went a long way to help himself. I think he was probably going to be a pick anyway, if not if he was borderline before. I don't think anything he did this week, certainly finishing with an eagle, is going to give the captain something to look at. I think JT gave him something to look at, to be honest with you, simply based on the
played
idea.
Very well. Played very
he
well.
Played very well, and he was in a position where he hadn't played well in the playoffs, and he just barely made it into Eastlake. And you could have made an argument that maybe since Jordan Spieth wasn't going to be on the team, those two, you don't have that natural pairing now. Maybe it's time to move on from JT. Not saying that he's not going to play on another team, but I think you have to go all the way down to number 18 or 19 on the list, if I'm not mistaken, if you're going to pick
19.
Justin Thomas. So I think at the top, it's going to be the same. And we talked about this a little bit. I think Sam Burns is going to be pretty much a lock when you look at that. I think you made a really, really good argument for some other players coming down the stretch. I am going to be curious, because when I talked to Jim Furyk last week, he made it clear he's not a big analytics guy. So he's not digging into the stats.
Oh, gosh.
He said he kind of looks at guts and the guys that want to be in that arena. And in my mind, that's got Brian Harmon. That's got Russell Henley written all over it. I know you have made the argument, and I think it's a legitimate argument that Nick Dunlap should be considered. The problem there is your pass.
Rex, if Jim Furyk is not paying attention to analytics, I highly doubt he is considering Nick Dunlap for this team, although
no,
he should be.
No, but I asked Nick. I asked the captain specifically about Nick Dunlap, and certainly he's on his radar. The fact that he didn't get any points for the American Express win should factor into this. At the very least, create a list that does include those points and just see where he is, just based on that idea. There's nothing wrong with bringing in rookies, and I think it's going to be a relatively young team based on kind of the model that you look at. The other side of the coin is Mike Weir. And no, I don't think anything changed. I mean, he only had two players who were sort of right there on that bubble who were playing this week, Taylor Pendrith being the one that would stand out. My guess is the Canadian Mike Weir is going to pick as many Canadians as he possibly can to play in the President's Cup in Canada. That's the simplest analysis I have.
Yeah, I almost think that Mike Weir could go 7 through 12 on this list. Corey Connors just missed out on an automatic qualifying spot. Obviously Canadian, he's going to be on that team. Cam Davis won an event on the PGA Tour this summer. Minwoo Lee, an explosive young player. He'll be making his President's Cup debut. I think could inject some sort of that Tom Kim type energy. Christian Bezuidenhout has had a nice season.
And he played decent this week.
Made it all the way to Eastlake. Has played the President's Cup before. Taylor Pendrith, as you mentioned, had himself a nice week. Finished inside the top 15. A Canadian as well. He's going to have a decision. Do you take Nick Taylor? Do you take Adam Hadwin? Or do you take Mackenzie Hughes with that final pick?
Canadians.
That is going to be, I think it's going to be a 3-for-1. And so that is going to be a very undesirable position for Mike Weir to be in. He's going to be having to making some difficult phone calls. I also think, Rex, the more Canadians you put on the team, the more pressure that heaps on them. Because you know the home crowd's going to be behind them. You know it's going to be the most pressure they've faced in their entire careers to this point. I almost think that could backfire for the international team. For the U.S., I think this is going to be very complicated for Jim Furyk as well. And I'm curious what you think about here. So Sam Burns, lock. Tony Finau, lock. I would actually put Russell Henley now in that category of a lock. Top 10s in both summer opens. Top 5 finish at the FedEx Cup. Great iron player. Great putter. He deserves kind of like that Billy Horschel, Kevin Kisner role a couple years ago at Quail Hollow. I think he'll be making his team debut in sort of the latter stages of his career as well at the age of 35. I would put Justin Thomas on that team as well, a match play specialist, and is coming off a good week here at Eastlake. Has also played well in a couple of big tournaments this year, either signature events or the major championships. Then I think you can go in any direction. I would not put Max Homa on this team. He did not make it all the way to Eastlake. Is having some sort of driver issue that needs to be sorted out. I would put Akshay Bhatia if you're planning for the future. 21 years old, a winner on the PGA Tour this year. I think he deserves a spot on that team. That's 5. Then you can go a Keegan Bradley. Then you can go a Billy Horschel. Obviously, I've made my case for Nick Dunlap, and I think he should be on that U.S. team as well. Keegan Bradley did not help himself this week, Rex. Shot just 2 under par. Said he was dog tired afterward. Said he's had conversations with Jim Furyk, but he does not particularly know which way he's leaning. I would not blow up my plans if I'm Jim Furyk that you've had for 3 or 4 months based on one tournament at altitude in a 50-man field. Keep Keegan Bradley in the back room as the assistant captain. That being said, I'm not sure we will go that direction. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Rex has plenty to write about on Sunday at Eastlake, not just wrapping up Scottie Scheffler's season, but also stay tuned for that President's Cup breakdown. Rex and I will be on Golf Today on Tuesday, breaking down the picks, and then we will do an emergency podcast. We will go dive in even further discussion about those picks and preview the action at Royal Montreal. It has been a fun season on the PGA Tour, capped, of course, by Scottie Scheffler's dominant victory. We appreciate you guys tagging along each and every week with the podcast. We'll be coming up with stuff, don't worry, this fall, and not just Georgia coming off its 34-3 victory over Clemson. All right, thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. We'll be back on Tuesday afternoon for the emergency podcast. That's all for now. Have a great rest of your Sunday.
What happens when you shank always?